After setting out to find a couple of reliable, charming, respected hosts, they exhausted the search and went with DC and me. How are you, partner?
They got it wrong, Uncle Chael. Chael, they got it wrong, baby. What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier, and that's my partner, Chael Sonnen. Chael, look, man, I love being home, but what I was most excited about is safety. Because in Miami, I had no idea, Chael, that we were in such danger. ESPN had so much security. I felt like President Trump there walking me from my car to the arena, from the arena to the car, to the car, to the hotel. Were we in that much danger down in Miami? I know Masvidal wanted you, but I didn't know that the danger was such a high level, Chael. We had like a Secret Service detail following us around last week.
And Daniel, I never know how to interpret it. Like, on one hand, I kind of liked bragging to my wife and some people, you know, that we're getting the special treatment and they're waiting for us at the elevator. On the other side, if it is because of the threat I received from Masvidal, it appears that ESPN has very clearly decided Masvidal would have won, right? Like, if you would have stuck the security on him, I could give myself a pat on the back, but it sounds like perception went against the bad guy on this one.
Unbelievable that people seem to forget who DC and the bad guy are. But Chael, someone they will never forget about is Sugar Sean O'Malley, right? His reputation preceded him when we got to Miami. But then when the octagon door closed, he was absolutely perfect. How impressed were you by Sean O'Malley? Because to me, I have never seen him look better.
Daniel, I pause to get my thoughts together from which compliment would I like to give him first. And I would like to go in order of significance to the fight. And that also gives me pause. Look, the story of this contest for me was the feints. I bring that to you because one night before, the story between Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua was the feints. And that's just getting a reaction. I love to tell people, partner, that fighting is a dance in that only one person can lead at a time. So your old coach, John Smith, he was all offense. He really didn't need a lot of defense. The opponents really never got going. They didn't get in on him very often. Well, that's what O'Malley did here. O'Malley had Cheeto guessing and thinking all night. Generally, one guy goes, the other guy goes. It's kind of this unwritten code. One guy comes with a combination, the other guy goes with a combination. When you're Sean O'Malley, you break that unwritten deal. You attack, you attack, you attack nonstop. Pretty soon, five rounds goes by, and they raise your hand.
Yeah, and, you know, from the very start of the fight, you could see that he was different. He is carrying this confidence about himself now that will make it very difficult to take that belt from Sugar Sean O'Malley. You know, one thing that was very interesting to me was all week it felt like Chito Vera was going to be the one that was universally loved inside that arena. But, boy, you could tell a difference. When Chito Vera walked, it was loud. But when Sean O'Malley walked, it was much louder. You saw who people were in the corner of when the actual event started. And when the fight started, Sugar Sean was popping the jab. Sugar Sean was moving. And there have been a couple of instances now where I have seen Marlon Vera, who is traditionally a guy that likes to take the first round off and start slow, not be able to work his way back into the fight because now the opponents know not to let him get any momentum and not to let him start to find his flow and his rhythm. Those feints, Chael, that you speak of, never allowed Pacito to build his rhythm, never allowed Pacito to know exactly where Sugar Sean O'Malley was. And I was very impressed with that. I was also impressed with his output. I was also impressed with the fact that there were a few fights ago, and Sean and I would go back and forth on this arguing because he would look up at the clock at the second, in the second, third round, it would seem as though he was fatiguing. This time, this dude's into the fifth round, and he's trying to finish, even though coach told him, you're ahead, Sean. You can start to sit back. This guy's got to come to you. This guy was still fighting with the same effort and intensity as he did earlier in the fight.
Daniel, you used a few words there, and the audience isn't going to be able to see it, but this is why you're so good at this job. You talked about pace, you talked about effort, and you talked about output. Now, those are intangibles, but it's so important that we understand that. I don't know when Sean O'Malley went and got in this great shape. I mean, I just don't understand how that would happen. He hasn't changed anything. He didn't change his diet. He didn't change his coach. He didn't change his workout partners. He didn't go change at altitude. I don't know where that came from. If I'm to back up on O'Malley, when he became the number one contender, he went from number 10 to number one. That had never happened. He did it in one fight, but it was by beating Petr Yan. And O'Malley said after the fight, I'm using his words, not mine, said, I've never been so tired in my whole life. And Daniel, that was a 15-minute contest. So now all of a sudden, he's not only extending to five rounds, which is the first time he's ever done that, but you also learn how to pace yourself in five rounds. Most athletes do the math. If they're up by four going into the fifth, they don't try to beat the opponent anymore. They try to just run out the clock. The whole reason I'm spending time talking about this is because we foreshadow and we start to look forward into Merab. Merab is a guy who is weaponized pace as well as anybody in the sport, not just the division. Seeing that O'Malley all of a sudden, he's Mr. Cardio Machine, it changes my perception of that fight, partner.
You know, that was one of the biggest knocks without really knowing if he was really that tired, was that maybe you could get him fatigued, especially in the Petr Yan fight. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. He seems to be complete, and he seems to be a guy that's just building. And right now, if he can continue to build, you start to look at these matchups, and you don't really know how they're going to compete against O'Malley, because one of the issues Merab will deal with is dealing with the length of Sean O'Malley. Chito Vera is about as big as Sean O'Malley, and he couldn't get to him because Sean is such a master at dictating the range. He doesn't fight you in close. He fights you at his range. When you start to crowd him, he just steps off, pivots, and turns, and now you're on the edge of his punches again, and he has this feel, right, where most don't recognize it, Chael, because you and I know when we were fighting, when we wanted to hurt somebody, we threw really hard. You know in your mind, you kind of bite your mouthpiece and you just throw as hard as you could. Sean O'Malley never does that. Everything kind of goes at the same speed and pace, but he just knows when one lands perfect and he has you hurt, and then he turns it up. And in the fifth round, you saw that with Marlon Vera. He got him hurt. Boom. Then he turned it up, tried to finish him. But then when he realized the finish wasn't materializing, he just kind of backed off again. I just think that this kid's mind for fighting is growing every single time. And more 25-minute fights will only make him more and more dangerous.
Sure. Hey, and let's look at the silver medalist, right? One thing that we never do, but let's take a look at Chito, because one thing I didn't learn about Chito is anything I didn't already know. He is dog tough. He shows up to win. He is not going to quit, and he can go 25 minutes. And the whole reason I say that, for O'Malley to show this gap, look, you want to talk about how that first fight ended, which, by the way, was in Chito's favor? We can go back and forth on that. If I'm to be very open, Daniel, I was surprised when the odds makers put this fight together that they had, with the evidence that they had, which is these two having already fought, O'Malley was the favorite. I'm not totally sure that's what I saw. I thought that Chito looked very good at a minimum. There was a gap on Saturday. I mean, there was a very meaningful gap. And when you talk about the star power of O'Malley, Daniel, you'll always have guys in the position of you and I coming to the fans and talking about sports. And we'll always use a word like pressure. We'll even debate it. Who's got more pressure on them? Well, when you talk about the star power of O'Malley, now's when you're feeling the pressure. Him claiming he could get on the Contender Series or even get a contract out of that. Him claiming he could break into the top 10 or even ultimately get a title fight. Those things are very different when you're young and you're the hunt. When you're younger than the other guy, when you're less experienced, when you're the 2.5 to 1 underdog, flip the script. He sold the house out almost 2 weeks in advance. He was the favorite for the first time in his career. He's got to go in and defend it for the first time, which in our industry, we have decided is a very important thing to do. Partner, I'm just talking about pressure that will create a fatigue and bring you down and make you underperform. He had all of those things, and that was still the performance. Just how good is this guy?
I mean, he's really good, you know, and when we talk about Sean O'Malley, right, you look at some of the things that he starts to do, right? First guy to have custom shorts. He's got 9 fight bonuses now. Chael, this dude is landing 6 out of 10 strikes every time he throws. He's got 6 knockout wins. But to your point, when Sean O'Malley sells out the house before the event starts. When Sean O'Malley has, what, 19, 20,000 in there going crazy for him when his music hits. When the pay-per-view does gangbusters. When he starts to feel like he is starting to break out. You take note and wonder aloud, how big of a star is this kid and what is his potential to be a star down the line? For me, the biggest thing is, yeah, we were in there for a bantamweight title fight. Bantamweight title fights don't headline pay-per-view cards very often. And when they do, they are on the card with a whole bunch of other great guys. But it was very clear last weekend that people were there to watch Sean O'Malley. How big of a star can this kid really be right now?
Daniel, when we have the greats, and you're one of them, that says, you know what, I'm done. Here's my gloves and I'm not coming back. They'll go to a press conference. It happened with you. It happened with Brock. It happened with Ronda. Just for examples of names that people be able to relate to. But all the media asked Dana White the same thing, which is basically, what are you going to do now? Now that your career as a promoter is over, right? We got this thing. It's star-driven. Your star's just retired. You're in big trouble. And Dana always laughs. He says, well, we'll try to figure it out. He's never taken the time to explain one concept, which is when there's a huge star in the room, he sucks all the air out of the room. We don't need new guys. We don't need to go find new guys. We just need to give them an opportunity with the media without the star that's taking all the shine. The reason I bring that to you, Conor McGregor, still the biggest draw. And frankly, it's really not that close. Conor McGregor, not licensed. Conor McGregor, does he even get to go into that category if you're not carrying a license? One of the reasons moving Conor to the left is so you can insert a guy like O'Malley. And I hear all these comparisons and I realize he's not Conor just yet, but I'm only telling you that's because Conor says he's coming back. If Conor was to come out and say, nope, I am done, O'Malley would suck those fans incredibly quickly. That's the part that everybody seems to miss. The fans don't go away. They just jump to a different bandwagon. And right now, that man right there, that is the biggest star in our sport with a license.
Absolutely, because he is also competing. And you and I spoke about this last weekend. I don't know when we see McGregor again, but I do. Now, Chael, I heard some stuff that I'm not supposed to share where you might have been right. So you might have heard the backside talk before I heard the backside talk. You might have heard it before I did. And you took it to the show without sharing it to your partner. That is wrong, Chael. That is not right. You don't do that. You tell me the gossip, man.
Wait. Are they about to play a clip of this? I'm not sure the audience knows what you're talking about. I do, but I don't. I told you in Miami when we filmed last week's show, I said, hey, I don't know that Conor is being insincere. I think that perhaps he doesn't want to be a co-main event. I don't know if Dana can put him as a main event, such as fight with Chandler is not a number one contendership or a grudge match or a title match. It would seem as he's got to jerk the curtain at least for somebody. Now, that was a conversation. You laughed at me, but now you're saying that maybe something like that could be right?
Oh, I don't know. I can't tell you. I know for sure. I don't know when Conor's coming back. I don't know what's happening with Conor. And as soon as I go into the arena, I hear the same rumor that Uncle Chael heard. And that's why he was so stern in his idea that Conor was going to be back. I get it. What? One guy, though, that has not taken a hiatus, one guy that only took a short amount of time after losing by knockout was Dustin Poirier. He took on a very tough Benoit Saint-Denis last Saturday. And Chael, Benoit Saint-Denis fought at a pace that was nuts. But ultimately, Dustin Poirier floors him with a check right hook that puts him to sleep. At times, Chael, I didn't like Dustin's body language because it looked like he was very nervous. It looked like he was concerned. He kept jumping for guillotines. And when guys do, the last time we saw Dustin keep jumping guillotines was when he fought Khabib. And we saw how that ultimately ended because Khabib was overwhelming him. Dustin Poirier, though, gets up, lands those punches, finishes the fight, and once again proves why the Diamond is one of the biggest stars and one of the best fighters in the UFC lightweight division. How impressive was Dustin Poirier, especially under the circumstances where it seemed like he was in there with a guy that was intent on pushing him so much that he was going to falter?
I will see your praise, and I will raise you leadership quality. One thing that you did very well, Daniel, is you set an example for the locker room where guys could look to you and say, okay, that's what I need to go and be doing. But you knew it. You came through college wrestling. You've been a captain of a team before. Dustin Poirier does not understand that the locker room is looking to him. He does not understand his position in the sport. I mean, I bring that to you because 1 minute ago, we're talking about Conor McGregor is having a hesitation being a co-main event and letting somebody else go. Dustin Poirier didn't think about that. He thought about what his job is, which is to go out and compete hard for every moment that he's in there, do the best that he can to touch that opponent more times than that opponent touches him. Real simple. But you saw how well co-main event worked out about him, right? Here he is on our industry's biggest show, 3 days after the fact, and we're talking about him. It's a very big deal. What comes next for Dustin? Whatever they want to do, there would be no argument, truly. If they want to rematch him for a BMF title with Gaethje, if they want to see how Max does with Gaethje, but again, the BMF title, if they want to bring in next for Islam, if Khabib himself wants to come back, there would be no discussion, no argument if Dana comes out and says Dustin's going to be the guy to do it. Sure, of course he is.
Because that is why he is so valuable to the lightweight division, because you don't question his authenticity. You know he's a fighter. And I believe that last weekend just showed and proved to everyone why we all love him. Time and time again, Chill, we talk about people not wanting to fight a guy that's ranked number 12 if you're just in the top 3, 4, 5 and you've lived there for so long. Dustin recognized the potential for it to be over. You know, it could have been over for Dustin if he lost to that kid. We've seen it, right? Earlier in the night, Pedro Munhoz fought against Kyla Phillips. He's been ranked his whole entire career. Now he's going to be out of the rankings for the first time in a really long time. You can't lose to guys that are ranked so much lower than you. But Dustin Poirier did not lose. He knocked him out. And now, as you said, the world is his oyster. You very rarely get guys, Chael, that regardless of what happened the fight prior, they're always one big performance away from being right back in the conversation. And that's exactly what Dustin Poirier finds himself in this situation right now. But his opponent, Chael, Benoit Saint-Denis, a very tough guy, very good. Earlier in the week, anyone with any knowledge of fighting noticed that this guy had something on his forehead, staph infection. He went afterwards and said he had staff, he was dealing with it, and that was part of the reason why he fought so bad. Chael, he did have staff. He was finishing his run of antibiotics during the fighter meeting when we spoke to him, because I saw it. I immediately asked him about it, because if anybody recognizes staff, it's a wrestler. And I was like, well, how damaging is this for this kid? But is it just sour grapes? It feels like he's taking it and using it as an excuse when he didn't say it to the public prior.
I was a little surprised that he went in that direction. I'll share with you as a coach, I coach kids. Daniel, as a kid, what an embarrassing thing that I had to go through. I had acne, but I particularly had it on my body more than my face. Well, as a wrestler, I got to take my shirt off and I got to walk out there. I'm just sharing. It's one of those things. So my mom took me to a dermatologist. They gave us an antibiotic. I can tell you firsthand, it can affect your cardio. It's very important that you talk to the doctor and you say, hey, I'm a cardio athlete. They can switch your antibiotic, or at least back when I was 14 years old. The reason I bring it to you is that's a real thing. I remember doing a piece on it. Moya Kano had brought this out on social media. I responded to Moya Kano's bit with the very story that I just told you. And I did think it was a little bit interesting that Saint-Denis came out. I mean, this is a hero, right? This is a guy that's, this guy's jumped out of helicopters with guns in his hand. I mean, a real legitimate tough guy. I was very surprised whether it was true or not. I was surprised that he used the excuse. And if it wasn't so much as a cover story, Daniel, I really would have maybe even been as far as disappointed.
You know, he had it, right? It was clear that he had it. I think if you're going to use the excuse, Chael, you start laying it up before the fight. Well, I've been dealing with these antibiotics and I just, you know, I had this thing in my head, but I'm okay now. I'm okay now, guys. But when you do that, Chael, when you tell them a little bit and then you tell them how strong you are, though, and you're getting through it, if it goes sideways, then when you go back to it, people aren't as surprised as when it comes off as if it's just right away, nothing happened. With that being said, Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev have now exchanged tweets those guys seem like they're open to a June date. And after that one big performance, Dustin Poirier may find himself in a position to fight for the lightweight championship of the world. And honestly, Chael, when Dustin, with his star ability and his star power, I don't know if you can find a better fight for Islam right now as you continue to try to build the star. Because, Chael, you and I both love professional wrestling. But as Ric Flair beat Harley Race, and then Sting beat Ric Flair, and then the Ultimate Warrior had to beat Hulk Hogan, your heroes have to go out on their back if you want to elevate the next guy. And I believe that Islam Makhachev needs stars if he's ultimately going to become a star, and Dustin Poirier figures into that equation. Chael, I can't get your opinion on this, but I just wanted to make that note as to why that's important. Your boy, MVP, made his UFC debut last weekend against Kevin Holland. Can that karate style, Chael, while it's fun, be successful in the UFC? And if so, is last weekend the way every MVP fight is going to be? Where if he doesn't just do something spectacular, it seems like he's just kind of playing with his opponent.
Daniel, when my father was a kid, they would watch fights by hovering around a transistor radio. There was no such thing as pay-per-view. The word digital and to go online and the internet, I mean, these weren't even phrases back then. And the turn of the 1900s all the way up to about 1960, it wasn't all that irregular to have a boxing champion keep the belt for 10 years. And you'll have a lot of historians that come back and say, they were better back then. The training was better. Look at this. And I go, no, time out. There was no blueprint. You couldn't watch the guy. The trainers couldn't watch the opponent. The fellow fighters couldn't watch the opponent. You couldn't break things down. You couldn't do these type of things with film. Where I'm going with that is MVP in that karate style. Boy, is that special when it works. But once guys can study it and plan for it, they're not trying to beat him at it. They're just trying to slow it down. They're trying to nullify it. You know, when MVP did get to Kevin Holland, it wasn't pleasant. He hit Kevin with some really tough, but Kevin is so tough, he hit a few of them. The audience didn't quite know some of the pain that Kevin should have been in. I assure you, Kevin's feeling it this morning. Point I'm trying to make is MVP now has another game, which is to hide his techniques. Roy Jones had to go through it. Mayweather had to go through it. Anderson had to go through it. I bring those guys, these high-level technicians, that just as much of their game is about setting you up and tricking you, making you look at something else before they come and attack. Now they got to hide it better. Do you hide it behind a takedown attempt? Do you push a guy in a fence a little bit? These are the questions. Do you try to get inside and do the dirty boxing? There's a lot of things to make the guy guess. The whole game is about make the guy guess. MVP is doing the same thing that he's been doing for a number of years. No problem. He's getting his hand raised. I'm just bringing for you. If he wants that stuff to work, if he wants those oohs and ahs and he wants those finishes, he's got to hide it a little bit better.
He's got to have finishes. And to me, it was just surprising how frustrated he had Kevin Holland looking outside, inside of the octagon. He just looked like he didn't want to be there after a while because it didn't feel like he was fighting him. Now, Robles de Spain, 6'7". 87-inch reach, 3 fights, 19 seconds heading into the UFC. You wonder, can this guy replicate that? What does he do, Chael? 18-second knockout. How impressed were you by this? Dude, he's running backwards, throwing right hands, and he knocks him out. Josh Parisian goes down flat. First win for Robles de Spain. 18 seconds, very impressive to me.
The last time that I text John Jones, he took about 5 seconds to get back to me, and it was an emoji of a middle finger. Now, I tell you that story because I wanted to ask John Jones that question. I wanted to go to him so badly as a guy with length, right? As a guy with reach that's looked at this division and looked at other opponents, because I'm looking at him and saying, hey, from an MMA standpoint, you're breaking a lot of rules. Your hands are down. You're looping. Your chin is up. But he got a lot of power, didn't he? And he knew where that target was. He was real good with range. And he's just a big enough boy. He's only got to get you one time. So I just shared, Daniel, when I watched him, if I was Clayton Hires, my coach and trainer, there would have been a lot of things fundamentally that were off from what we're used to. But this is a little bit of a different striking art. We've never really seen somebody with Taekwondo at this level. I don't recall ever, not just in the heavyweight division of the UFC, I personally as a fan don't remember ever watching an Olympic medalist in Taekwondo go out and do this sport. If it's happened, I'm just sharing with your partner that I missed it. So I'm very open to this young man. I do hope if he's watching this that he'd be just as open to hearing a couple of the basics and the fundamentals that we do with these little gloves on in that specific cage. I think if I was to bet, he could make some corrections. I think he's got to tighten a few things up. He sure does look impressive, though.
He does look impressive, but you're right. There are some things that he needs to fix. But chill, here's the scary thought. He's only starting. And as we have seen time and time again, as guys go longer in their career, they keep getting better. Imagine this guy actually developing those skills and becoming a true heavyweight contender, someone that doesn't fight in that fashion, but the power is very impressive. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Chael, next segment, call-outs. We had some great call-outs last weekend. Let's rate these call-outs with a letter grade. So Teacher Chael, Mr. Cormier, we're going to call ourselves Mr. on this segment. Let's get to those call-outs. We start with Sugar Sean O'Malley.
Dana, give me a jet to Spain, baby. I'm coming for Ilia Topuria. And if he doesn't want it, I'll I want Ilia, baby. Give me Ilia.
All right, now I got to give him a B. I got to give it, but I don't think he would give himself a top grade either, because he hedged just a little bit. The one thing you need in a call out is you as the captain of your army have got to align all those cannons, all those Twitters and Facebooks and Instagrams, and let them know which direction you're going. What was so fun, I loved it. I loved when Sean did it, because there's no part of me that believes that he believes that he's going to go and fight Topuria. He knows it's Marab. Marab weighed in the day before. Marab was announced 3 weeks ago in Anaheim to be next. Marab was sitting in the front row waiting for Sean to call him out so Marab could bust through security and get a face-to-face off like the one that you helped set up for the big showdown in Perth between Islam and Volk. So I only share that with you. I loved it because that's what Sean was really doing. He was trying to stick it to Marab. The bad news, The bad news is he's starting to realize what he did by calling out Topuria. He kind of looks over his shoulder. He starts to see, hey, we got a whole production team that's got this guy in the front row queued up. And he starts to take it back a little bit. He says, well, you know, I will fight whoever you want. I just wish he would have stayed with it, partner. You and I could come out a day like today and fix it, let the world know who his opponent's really going to be. I liked that he was being almost mean-spirited towards Marab.
B minus for me, Chael, for all those same reasons. He was going to call out. It was almost like a not real call out of Ilya, because even when I sat down with him and spoke to him, he even told me, he goes, I thought that the fans would respond to the Ilya call out a little bit better than they did. And he went back to it. And then when he went back to it, he kind of realized right in the middle, I'm fighting Marab, man. They're not going to give me the Topuria fight. He hasn't defended. Let me kind of just stay in the middle. It doesn't work when it's in the middle, but I'm more into it today. Before, I would have gave it an F. But I am more excited after watching him compete last weekend, because I feel that in due time, Ilya Topuria versus Sean O'Malley would be a really, really good fight. All right, Chael, now we get to Jack Della. Jack Della calls out the Boogeyman. Listen to this.
There's some scary people in this division, but I'm the scariest than Shavkat Rakhmonov. I think me and you could make a hell of a title eliminator. One of the best in the business. Let's go.
There was two things here, okay? Two things happened at once. He did not only call out Rakhmonov, he also set the stakes. He set the stakes for title eliminator, which quite frankly sounds right. I don't know that I believe that Rakhmonov, who's 16, 17, maybe even 18-0, he's won so many fights with no losses and all by finish that I've lost track. I don't believe that he's going to need to do more than one fight to be in that conversation. Now, I tell you this because Blahal Muhammad, just for comparison, is next. We're told that he's a number one contender and that he's going to be fighting with Leon. Well, Blahal did a number of great things to get that spot. But the final thing that he did is he beat Gilbert Burns. It was very close and competitive. You got Jack stopped Gilbert Burns. I mean, just for a comparison, I know Jack's not going right into a title shot. I just wanted to make sure the audience knows that this is going to be a very reasonable name. And ultimately, part of there is a litmus test, which is, do you get the fight? You and I are coming at it from an entertainment standpoint. Ultimately, do you get the fight would represent your later letter grade. I know we're not there yet. I think so, though. No one else is going to call out Rakhmonov. I have not heard any better ideas. I know that Rakhmonov currently has a hurt ankle, but I imagine Jack would want a little bit of time off. I think he's going to get the fight.
A plus for me, Chael. A plus. It was perfect. And again, you set the stakes for what the fight means. Title eliminator. UFC goes, oh, thank you for doing my job. I'm sitting right next to Sean Shelby. I go, wow, he called out Rakhmonov. Nobody else is with their hand up. He goes, nobody has got their hand up to fight Rakhmonov. So what you do, when you know that you're getting close, you call out the most dangerous guy, and you make sure that if you fight the most dangerous guy, you get the reward at the end of it. If you can get your hand raised, it was an A+. Great job by Jack Della Maddalena. Last one, Curtis Blaydes beats Jailton Almeida, and he says this.
I believe me and Aspinall got some unfinished business. I'd like to get that one next. That's my next fight, Aspinall.
All right, now I got to be real fair. Back when I was in school, you could argue. It was called office hours. You show up to that professor's office hours, you put that paper down, and you make your case. You might get him to regrade you. Well, that's what's happened here, because Uncle Chael gave Curtis a C. I gave him a C because when he said that Tom and I have unfinished business, it's like, hey, Curtis, if we're going to tell the story, let's tell the truth. You fought Tom, you beat Tom. Tom went on to Madison Square Garden to win a world championship. You went to the undercard. Tell it like it happened. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, those two fought. Curtis went to his hometown. Curtis found a way to win in the very first round. Usually that's celebrated. So I only say that because I thought it was going to kind of be dismissed. I thought it put Tom in a perfect position to dismiss it. Now, when I talk about amending the grade this morning, Tom's people reached out to me and said, we'll take that fight. I got to bring that to you. And if that's hit the media by now, I haven't seen it. I've got the text directly to me. I want the credit for this. I hope I'm bringing that to you. Maybe you've already heard, but if you get the fight from Tom, even if they don't make it, but he says that, you did something right. I'm giving him an A.
I gave him an A minus, Chael. Look, it won't be big because Curtis Blaydes does not have that personality. He will not yell in the octagon. You can almost see him with his arms crossed like he's inside of himself because he's uncomfortable making the call out. But I give him an A-minus because of this. He recognized the situation and knows the circumstances. He is about to watch a guy later in the evening be in the same situation he can find himself in, want to fight over a guy by an injury that ultimately became the champion, knowing that Tom Aspinall does not have an opponent, knowing that there is an opportunity to get your hand around a belt. That is exactly the perfect thing for Curtis Blaydes to do. I'm giving him an A-minus only because he's standing in there like a shy kid at a dance in middle school, and he doesn't have the delivery. But guess what? I can't ding him too bad because he had the right script. He just does not know how to deliver it. That's not his personality. But great job on my end when I talk about Curtis Blaydes. All right, Chael, we did our other segment called Headline Hunch. It's time for the Headline Hunch.
The undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
All right, Chael, your headline hunch was that Almeida versus Blaydes fight would end up being essentially a title eliminator. What do you think?
I think it definitely would have been for Almeida. Now, I only think that he's got such a beautiful record. It was on such beautiful pacing, and Tom Aspinall helped to set the stage. Tom Aspinall's the one that kind of said, hey, Almeida's the one we all need to look at. He even suggested something for Almeida. Tom had said, and Tom is our reigning interim champion, most definitely has the right to an opinion, but he said, I want to put Almeida in there, and I want to do that against Surreal. I don't know if that was ever negotiated, but ultimately we got Blaydes in there. A record was set in the first round by Almeida. So we know that Almeida felt good. We know that he was fighting well. He was fighting well that night. He won the one and only completed round. It was a bit of a come from behind for Blaydes. I don't believe that Blaydes is going to get the mandate of the masses. I love that Tom came out and addressed it and at least showed him a little bit of shine. But just because Tom shined him and just because they have a past, I just don't know that Curtis can get the fans with him. I don't know that I think that's fair. I don't know what it is that Curtis Blaydes did wrong. I could tell you a lot of things he did right, like fighting Francis Ngannou when nobody else would. How about the fact that he lost to Francis in 28 seconds? So he begged to fight him again, got on an airplane, short notice, went to a different continent, fought him again. That one was even quicker than 28 seconds. So what did Curtis do? He begged to fight him yet again. Generally, we credit guys like that. Generally, we show respect and appreciation to guys like that. I feel as though Blaydes somewhere along the way has upset the fans, and I missed it. I don't know what this guy did wrong.
I don't think he did anything wrong. Chael, my hunch was that UFC 299 would be so good that we would question whether or not UFC 300 could live up to it. I do believe that we got a great fight card Saturday night, man. We had Sean O'Malley looking like an absolute monster. We got Dustin Poirier with a fantastic performance. We also got to see Piotr Jan in a great fight against Song Yadong. The prelims were outstanding. Look, I feel like my hunch was pretty good, but I don't know if I'm questioning anymore when UFC 300 looks like this. Obviously, we got Alex Pereira and Jamal Hill for the light heavyweight championship. Zhang Weili takes on Yao Shaonan. Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway fight for the BMF title. Bo Nickel's on the card. Oliveira Sarukian is the first fight of the main card. UFC 300 is bananas. And look at the prelims, JLP. Alexander Rakic takes on Jiří Prochazka on the featured prelim. Aljamain Sterling takes on Calvin Kattar. And guys, if it wasn't good enough with all those great fights, Money Moicano gets on the fight card as he takes on the tarantula Jalen Turner. UFC 300 is going to be absolutely bananas. And Chael, I cannot wait to get to the fight capital for what is going to be the greatest fight card that we have ever seen in our entire lives. Chael P, but you know what time it is. It's time for the good,
for
the bad.
For anyone that doesn't know,
it absolutely sucks.
That's real good.
You absolutely suck.
All right, Chael. So Michelle Pereira out there with his coach dancing, looking good. Whole routine, Chael. So is this good, bad, or does it absolutely suck?
And listen, I must, in full disclosure, I've got a little bit of an envy here. I could not have done that. First off, I don't have the rhythm. And if you're a fighter and you can dance and you have rhythm, you truly do have a little bit of a leg up, particularly when it stays on his feet. I knew guys, Daniel, back in wrestling, they would cut weight. Everybody be on the mat and they'd be drilling, or some guys would be running stairs. I knew some other guys that would put on their sweats and then they would go dance right there in front of everybody. And it used to intimidate me. I was like, man, that's incredible. I can't move like that. And moreover, the focus. You know, some guys, there's something called paralysis by analysis where you study on your opponent so much, you freeze up. I like a guy that can stay loose. I mean, that is Tyson Fury level stuff. That is Israel Adesanya level stuff. I got to tell you, for me, it was good.
It was so good. It was so good, Chael. It was so good because not only did he dance his way to the octagon, he was able to put it into action. All that energy, he was able to redirect it and use it inside the fight. I have seen him before, though, do that same type of thing and not be able to fight at the level he needed to. He fatigued himself. This time he didn't. He was able to get a tremendous performance. Loved every second of it, JLP.
All right, Daniel, this one I feel is really going to be a bit trying for you. Now, this is good, bad, or absolutely sucks. And I'm talking about Jake Paul, one of the top stars in boxing when it comes to box office draw, taking on the most feared combat athlete of all time, Iron Mike Tyson.
You know, Chael, it absolutely sucks. It absolutely sucks because while I love Iron Mike, while I want Mike to make as much money as he possibly can, Chael, that video right there is about 3 to 4 years old, right? Mike is a different person now. I saw Mike walk into the UFC last year with a walking stick. I mean, I don't know how they pull this off. Now, will they let Mike just hit him? If they let Mike go at this dude and Mike just tries to get him out of there in a few minutes, maybe it works, but I don't know that they risk it with Mike trying to go at Jake Paul in that way. I think it absolutely sucks. I think Mike Tyson's fighting days are over. I mean, he'll be 58 years old by the time he steps in the ring with Jake Paul, Chael. To me, it absolutely sucks.
All right, Daniel, I thought I was the great Kreskin on this. I thought I'm the Perry Mason that's going to crack the code. And it didn't matter if it was ESPN.com or if it was TMZ.com. I went to 5 different places that announced this, and none of them used the word box, and none of them used the word fight. That includes our.com. We said Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. TMZ said Jake Paul against Mike Tyson. A third one said Jake Paul signs for Mike Tyson. I'm only telling you, I thought, I've solved this. They're getting ready to bring the great swerve. Them and maybe their partner Netflix, but something else is coming out. They've gotten our attention. So to test this theory, I went to Jake Paul and I said, right about your fight, I will take on George Masvidal if it's co-main and no lower. He writes me back, I'm in, call you in the morning. So, oh my God, this really is going to happen. He ends up getting back to me in about 5 minutes. He says, hey, just talk to Masvidal. He's under contract with somebody else. That I know nothing about, but I'm just sharing with you what I thought was going to be a swerve. I now think they're going to do, and I hate it.
Those guys are actually going to fight. All right, Chael, when you are in the other organization, you cannot waste stars. Cedric, and I want to make sure I try to say his name right, Duwambe, and PFL, is a star, but Mark Goddard stops the fight because of a splinter or something. It was very confusing, Chael. Was this good, bad, or ugly? Or did it absolutely suck?
Well, this was ugly, but it wasn't wrong. I'll tell you that much. I mean, what was Mark Goddard supposed to do? Cedric is saying something to Goddard. I mean, the fight's going on. Just if anyone didn't see it, the two guys are separated, Goddard in between, and the athlete is saying something to the referee. So the referee, to let him know, I don't speak your language, I can't quite hear you, lets him know with the universal, get to fighting, which is a requirement under the rules. You've got to be out there and engaging. Now, I tell you that because the athlete did it again to Goddard, and the athlete was looking down and gesturing down. It was a sliver. I mean, people were calling it a splinter. I could only tell you my mother called something like that a sliver, that I should get the tweezers and pull them out. When I bring that to you, we can't expect that Mark Goddard could see it. We know that he can't really understand it, particularly with the noise in the room. There is not a mechanism within the unified rules for Mark Goddard to stop the action, ask him, what is it you were saying, and then restart it. That mechanism doesn't exist. If Mark's going to stop it, he's got to stop the contest, which is what he did. Mark Goddard got this one right.
It was just bad to me because we have seen time and time again, guys gesture to officials and the official does stop and either gives them time because they say they got poked in the eye. They say they got hit low. The official does just give them time. It's only bad partly because of who the fighter is to that organization. You got to recognize who's in front of you and you got to protect the guy that has the potential to be a star. Chael, you were involved in something like this before when you were fighting for a championship against our good friend John Jones, and that dude kept fighting. I mean, that there is something you stop a fight for. Chael, look at the difference in that.
Yeah. Nah, they missed it. They missed it, DC. I mean, had they have seen that, and I always wonder this, because that was only like 14, 15 seconds before the round was up. Let's say John would have gone to his corner. He's on the stool. Greg Jackson, head corner man, sees it. Does he notify somebody? And there was a period of time, even when John saw it right before you cut that clip off, that he looks down. He goes into a little bit of shock, which is just a natural human emotion. I tell you all of that because I wonder if they would have forfeited to me. I mean, I wonder if a doctor would have seen, if the doctor would have seen it, they would have stopped the fight. Compound fracture, I would have won. Crowd would have been doing, partner, I'd have taken that belt off, I'd have held it up, and I'd have told that crowd to remember the golden rule. He with the gold makes the rules. And I'd have walked right out of that ring. Now, inside, I'd have known how cowardly that was. But on the outside, I'd have played champion of the world.
Hey, Chael, they screwed you, my guy. They absolutely screwed you by missing the injury. Chael, they screwed you. But, Chael, you know who kind of got screwed? But it wasn't due to the commission or an official. Francis Ngannou got flatlined last weekend, Chael. That was as bad a knockout as I've seen. Watching that, Chael, what did you feel? Was it good? Was it bad? Or did it just absolutely suck to see Francis go out in that way?
You could have counted to one, or you could have counted to 100. He still would have been down. Look, I got to tell you this. Do you know what courage that takes? I mean, all fairness, do you know the courage that it takes? What I saw Joshua do to Francis is what should have happened. It's just, it didn't happen when Francis fought Tyson. It didn't happen when Conor fought Mayweather. It's what I predicted both of those times. If I was to put myself in their shoes, I would not expect to make it 4 minutes along with the heavyweight champion of the world in a sport that I had never done before. I mean, I only bring that to you because there's another side to Francis. Like, hey, guys, time out. The only reason Francis is here is because he did so well in his previous match. Now, things got straightened out. I think that the real boxers really do need to go out and do that. I know if somebody else tried to come to our sport, DC, of wrestling, you're not going to let him make it 4 minutes. Kale wasn't going to let him make it 4 minutes. Jordan Burroughs today is not going to let a guy, no matter how good and talented or hard work his camp was, make it more than 4 minutes. Joshua did what Joshua should have done.
Joshua did what Joshua should have done. It sucked for me. It absolutely sucked to see a guy that I consider a friend go out like that. But it felt like Anthony Joshua went out there to put the world back right in terms of boxing. You're right, Chael. Randy Couture went out there and he submitted James Toney because he was like, there is no way these guys are going to feel like they can come over here and compete. Anthony Joshua did that to Francis Ngannou. Now, on the flip side, Francis Ngannou has made $30 million in two fights, so he has done well in that regard. But yes, it absolutely sucked for me. Chael, explain this tweet for us. I don't get what your tweet was in terms of fighting Francis Ngannou. Like, what was that, my friend?
All right. Now, for the most part, this is between Francis and I. But Francis and I had to be separated in a parking garage. I got to tell you, you come face to face with an angry Francis in a street fight situation. So here we are. Security breaks it up, but they don't get involved. They're over my shoulder. I can hear them yelling at us, but they don't actually come over. So now we've turned and squared up. I know the same thing about fighting as everybody else watching this knows about fighting, which is whatever your father taught you. And my dad did not tell me I had to wait to defend myself. He told me when they're within arm's reach, it has begun. But Daniel, I don't want this thing to jump off. I got an ego too. I'm looking, I got these glasses. I'm thinking about he's going to crack me with these glasses. You want to know the only thing that could go through my mind? I'm thinking about a time when I'm in the sixth grade watching the late night news and some guy walked into a bar and called out Mike Tyson and Mike Tyson stepped outside. Mike hit the guy one time and the way the news reporter reported back when I was in the sixth grade is that he shattered the guy's face. I don't know what a shattered face is, but that cannot be good. And I'm literally hearing that report as I'm squared up with Francis. I'm doing the math too. Like, I got an ego too. You duck, John Jones. I'll fight John right now and I might have to fight you right now. Like, this is going through my mind, but my son is about 12 feet away and he's in a pair of gloves that Nate Diaz had given him. It was the Nate Diaz versus Jake Paul. Nate had given him a pair of gloves. So my son's over, he's shadow boxing. Francis doesn't know he's there. I said, Francis, not now. And he lets me know this is happening now. I've been looking for you for a while. And I took my hand and I just went like this to my son. I said, not in front of my son. Francis looks over and sees my son. Not a word did he say. Respect. He understood the code. He dropped it right there. That was a gentleman move by him. I look at him differently. As mad as he might be at me, I look at him differently after that.
Yeah, he's an absolute killer, but nobody respects more people. Nobody respects people like Francis Ngannou. He's a gentle giant until it's time for him not to be a gentle giant. Guys, Chael, thank you again. The show is awesome, bro. I love doing this with you every week, and I wish we can go longer. But, guys, every Monday and Thursday, get your new episodes of Good Guy, Bad Guy with DC and Chael Sonnen. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. Catch us on YouTube, ESPN Plus, and Midnight Eastern on ESPN 2. Every single week, 2 days a week, you get to spend time with DC and Unk. Until next time, peace.